I'm Brian White, KTSA News.
Well, I got to start out by saying, you know, I'm not from here, but I've been here a long time, 30 years this year, and I want to stay here. And by here, I mean Texas, San Antonio, KTSA. So let me put this to you, because I'm not from here. There was an open letter from the UT Austin faculty condemning the president of the University of Texas and the administration for permitting the city police and DPS to respond to the demonstrations yesterday. The Palestine Solidarity Committee, as they call themselves, in this letter, had planned a day-long public University of Gaza educational event today on UT Austin's main lawn. Teach-in, study sessions, pizza, and an art workshop. There was no threat of violence, no plans to disrupt classes, no intimidation of the campus community. They then go on to say, we can't have business as usual when our campus is occupied by city police and state troopers, which is an interesting use of a phrase, because remember, the Hamas apologists claim that they're occupied. There can be no business as usual when our campus is occupied by city police and state troopers who are preventing our students from engaging in a peaceful demonstration of their First Amendment rights. By bringing militarized and armed forces onto our campus and refusing to call them off, you've made our entire campus community unsafe. You've put our entire student body at risk. There will be no business as usual tomorrow. There will be no classes. There will be no grading, no work, no assignments. Gather at the main mall in front of the UT Tower at 12:15 p.m. Hashtag not our Texas. This is not our Texas. What is Texas? Is Texas the Free University of Palestine in downtown Austin? Is Texas rule of law? Is Texas forming human chains around Jewish students and blocking their movement? Or is Texas get your ass to school and go to class and get your work done? I'll leave it up to you. You tell me. Did the university respond the way Texas should respond? Or is this not Texas? And we should have the University of Palestine on the UT lawn. I see where USC has canceled their graduation ceremony, scheduled for May 10th. It's quite a ways away. But apparently they are afraid that this will still be going on. I guess in this decision, they're conceding that this will still be going on. This is like telling the demonstrators, keep on trucking. They've canceled the May 10th commencement with a statement that says, in part, we understand that this is disappointing. However, we're adding many new activities and celebrations to make this academically meaningful, memorable, and uniquely USC. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I was the first in my family to go to college. Graduating was a big deal, and it would be obscene to go through all that and then not have commencement. I can't speak for other people. Maybe they don't care. Maybe it doesn't matter. But this incremental giving in to mob rule will never end well. You keep conceding a little here and conceding a little there, and you can tell yourself you're being, oh, we're just being commonsensical. We're just, you know, we're just yielding a little bit around the edges to keep things in order. And don't worry. We got a handle on the situation. We're not going to let it get out of control. But you see a lot of different, I was talking about this with somebody earlier. There's really a variety of responses around the country. Emory University, which is near Atlanta, condemned anti-Israeli activists who are not members of our community, their words, the university's words, for disrupting their campus today. And they welcomed a police response Several dozen protesters trespassed in Emory University's campus this morning and set up tents on the quad, said the university in a statement. These individuals are not members of our community. They are activists disrupting our university as our students finish classes and prepare for finals. That's what I like to hear. That's where I want my kid to go to school. If I had the decision to make about a son or daughter at this point, I would be looking for a school that is handling it, that is not taking any BS, that isn't conceding this and caving on that. That's where I want my kid to be, not only because they'll get an education, but because they'll be safe. Our academic institutions are in the hands of not only leftists, but cowards. In many ways, they're like our blue cities. Remember in 2020 how many blue city mayors caved and rationalized the CHOP and the CHAZ and said, let it burn, and called back their own police forces, officers that were willing to do their jobs but told not to. These universities are only too happy to let conservatives be shouted down. They don't seem to have any interest in free speech, free exercise of ideas, First Amendment, diversity of thought. When a conservative is invited to the campus, when it goes through the processes and the channels, and that person is there under the rules, but let a bunch of radicals bus in who aren't even students at the campus, invade the campus, disrupt the tuition-paying students, and then, First Amendment, we're just, it's summer of love. Part of it is they feel solidarity with these mobs. I mean, these are their people. You know, if these mobs were protesting for open carry or, protesting communist China or protesting for Trump, free Trump, let him campaign, there'd be a different reaction. You know, we wouldn't get all this pious sermonizing about how that's who we are, not our Texas. We also know these universities have given up basically on Western civilization. Not only do they not teach it, they don't really have any use for it. They believe that we live in and represent a culture that is racist, that lives on stolen land, that is too evil to make any rules or decisions. Although it's interesting that they hate Western civilization, but they do love Western civilization money. Like, we may be dirty and filthy and rotten, but we can still be the world's ATM machine, can't we? We're only our money is still okay with these people, and they'll take plenty of it as well. UT Austin took very minor action compared to other campuses, and these students and the students at all of these campuses, if they are students, have every right to be wrong. They have every right to be anti-Semites. They have every right to be ignorant. No one wants to censor that. We should want to correct it with education, and we should not allow it to happen at the expense of other people. And I also don't want to hear this bull about universities letting it happen and letting the natural flow of protest happen, because universities exclude corporate recruiters, military recruiters all the time. If you're from the outside and you want to come onto the campus and you want to put your ideas in front of the students, you want to make your pitch. These universities have no problem routinely denying that access. And yet, they all know that all of these protests are being funded, organized, and led by outside influences. They know it. Stephen Hayward wrote, I think the pro-Hamas protesters should step up their game and burn the colleges to the ground. That would be the ultimate divestment. And Michael Goodwin, writing in the New York Post, said the same thing we were saying last week. These are not the 1960s protesters. He said it much better than I do and did. But this is not like 1968. Goodwin writes, the earlier uprising was driven by opposition to a war in Asia that produced a televised stream of American body bags and the panic of young men facing the military draft. Today's protests are driven by something far more sinister, anti-Semitism. Jews are suddenly villains. Hamas terrorists are heroes. While many of the history-deprived students accuse Israel of committing genocide, they ignorantly chant, "From the river to the sea," which is a call for genocide. I would also point out that the 1960s protesters were the product of traditional pro-Western K through 12 education, traditional two-parent families, strong churches if they went to church. And these protesters have had none of that. And it's very different, and it's much more, I think it's much more toxic. So we'll talk about that. And I really want to get your take on whether you think having the police move in and establish order is a Texas thing, or whether letting it all happen is a Texas thing. Because that's what the faculty at UT said. If you really want to be Texas, you can't have the police here. 210-599-5555. I want to talk about that. This is some more polling from Bloomberg. I'll just go through this very quickly. Swing states, Bloomberg, North Carolina, Trump up by 10. In a three-way race with Robert Kennedy Jr., also up by 10. Nevada, Trump up by 8. In a three-way race in Nevada, Trump up by 15. The polling shows, when you go deeper into it, that neither Biden nor Trump are wildly popular with people. But people have a lot more reasons to not want Biden's presidency to continue, and a lot more reasons to go back to how things were under Trump's presidency. It's what we've talked about over and over again on this show. The voters are sorting this out in terms of issues and performance, not how do I feel about the guy. It's not, you know, it's not love connection. It's an election. Bidenomics, have you noticed that's disappeared from the discussion? Even the president doesn't use the term anymore. They don't put that on the banner behind him because that is tanking with voters. He's talking a lot about abortion, and 75% of voters in the Bloomberg survey think it is a very important or somewhat important issue. But for how many people is abortion the single issue or the only issue or the deciding issue? Well, I guess we're going to find out. Biden also beats Trump on climate change, but that's only important to 3% of voters in the Bloomberg polling. The border is killing the president with swing state voters. I mean, it's not close. It's not ambiguous. This issue is absolutely a disaster for Biden and the Democrats. It's going to hurt Democratic senators and Congress candidates as well. I don't think he can pivot on it, although I predict he will, because voters already know that Trump will be better on the issue. And he could actually hurt himself with his left flank if he does pivot on it, because they still buy the whole give us your tired, your poor, you know, interpretation of this. Here's a Harris poll that says more than half of all Americans, including 42% of Democrats, support mass deportations of undocumented immigrants. More than half of Americans, Harris poll. And so where I'm going with this is they will have to steal this election for President Joe Biden. They will have to. If this holds up and if these numbers are right, and if, I know, they will have to steal it. They have left themselves no way to win it. They have left themselves with a candidate who cannot win it, who isn't credible. I mean, you talk about comebacks, and the media love a comeback story in presidential politics, and it's happened before. An incumbent is way behind, and he catches up Harry Truman, Bill Clinton. But the problem with that is those candidates were dynamic, and they reached down deep inside themselves and pulled out the best, energy and moments they could muster. They were the best versions of themselves they could possibly be. this man who's president is not going to be able to do that. Not with all the enabling and spin in the world. The Bulwark, which is a Never Trump website, they hate Trump, wrote a piece comparing Donald Trump to Nelson Mandela. How the Nelson Mandela of America is making bank off his criminal trial, says TheBulwark.com. In his first week of his criminal trial, Donald Trump raised $5.6 million by warning his small-dollar donors that the deep state was out to lock him up. On Tuesday, Trump heightened the tension and brinkmanship by again taking to Truth Social and calling out the judge. If they lock Trump up for telling the truth, our fundraising will go supernova, a Trump advisor told Bulwark. They don't have the balls. We talked yesterday about whether they would actually jail him or fine him for the gag order. And Trump is maximizing the moment, so he's stuck in jail all day, court all day, and can't campaign, and can't have Diet Cokes, and can't hold rallies. And they laugh about this in the Bulwark article. He's fallen asleep at the defense table. One source says Trump told him, I'm catching up on my effing sleep because I'm bored. But here's what's happening. They're raising money. The Bulwark points this out, and they don't want him. But they have to admit, he's raising money. And by the way, he is way behind Biden on fundraising. Biden has about four times the campaign war chest that Trump has. But Trump is catching up and making money and not spending any money. Because remember, he's not doing rallies. So every dollar he raises is not going to campaign travel expenses and event expenses. His legal defense will cost a lot of money. And it probably will erase the savings of not having the events. But what they point out at the end of the article is the Trump strategy in this trial is very on brand. They talk to a Democratic fundraiser who says, Trump's whole proposition is grievance politics. Everyone's out to get me. Everyone's out to get my supporters. The system is rigged. And everything that's happening right now just reinforces that. Instead of him just saying it, from the comfort of his airplane or his podium, people see it. In fact, he doesn't even have to say it. Just turning on the news every day reminds you of it. If I were Trump's guy, would I feel great about this? Said the Democrat, no. But it's working for them. So we're going to talk about that. Julie is on the Jack Riccardi Show. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Jack. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Julie. How are you?
I am doing well, thank you. I was talking to my son yesterday. He's graduating from UT next month. He had just left the co-op to get his cords. He had gotten his cords. And he walked on campus. Now, my daughter's also at UT. These kids come from a very conservative Christian family. Anyway, there's a reason I say that. So he was like, Mom, the protesting, and he sent me pictures, and I could hear it, and he said, you know, there's Austin police, and then there's troopers and tactical gear, and you mentioned, is it Texas for the professors to let it happen, basically, is what you asked, or is it Texas for all the law enforcement to come in? Wasn't that your question?
Yes.
Okay. No, it's not Texas for the professors to act like it's okay. That is not Texas. Texas, in my opinion, doesn't tolerate anti-Semitism. That is not at all. No. For the troopers and the cops to come in, thank God they did, but no, that is not Texas. This is like, this whole thing is not like the 60s. This is like true, dark, spiritual warfare. And we are not to turn our backs on Israel. And that's what these idiots are attempting, to just spread hate. And it's up for you know, everybody has their own beliefs, and oh, the ACLU says, well, you know, freedom of speech. Freedom of speech, unless you start being threatening and breaking the law, you don't have any rights to do anything once you cross that line.
I'd also like to know, who got to decide that they named it the Free University of Gaza?
Right.
So the faculty can just rename a state university? Like, are these people are drunk on their own, you know, they're high on their own supply. I mean, they are completely drunk on the power of ripping the names off things and tearing down statues. And because we let that happen, this is what we now get.
Well, hey, you know, if you don't stand for something, you fall for anything. And if you don't have any moral fortitude, guess what happens? So, it goes beyond. This is disgusting. And anybody who is stupid enough to subscribe to, freedom of speech, well, just have at it, because look what happens when you're such an idiot.
Yeah. Anyway. Julie, I hope your kids do well at UT and are safe, and I appreciate your call. Thank you very much for calling. By the way, apropos of nothing, but let me just throw this out there too. You do remember, right, that at one point, I shouldn't say one point, for a while there in recent years, it became really important what name was on things and, you know, whether it was a dormitory building, an academic building, a street. We had to take the names of Civil War generals down. We had to take the names of the founders down. We had to take the names of the colonizers and the white guys and the old guys and the old white guys. And we had to take down anybody that had ever been on this or that side of this or that. And we made that very important. I mean, it was stop everything. We have to rename a building or a bridge. But if names matter, and I said this at the time, if names matter, then there has to be a process where everybody gets a vote. So if I'm a student at the University of Texas, or in the University of Texas system, which would include all the campuses, if I'm a parent, if I'm paying tuition, if I'm an employee of the system, or I'm a faculty member of the system, I have a voice, I have a vote too. Arguably everyone does, because we're all taxpayers. So if names matter, how is it that some small, selected, self-selected group of faculty get to have a new name? We're not playing a child's game here, you know? But again, because people thought, oh, it's just a sign. Oh, it's just a statue. No, remember, people would say, they don't even remember when that statue was put up. Why are you so bent out of shape about? Well, this is what you get when you keep backing up an inch and backing up an inch and backing up an inch, and you don't think you're backing up very much, but all of a sudden you hit the wall behind you, and now you get a problem. And that's where we're at. And I think, by the way, I'll go even a little further with the police. I think the university should be damn grateful that police officers, law enforcement, are willing to go and do this. Because who's been more disparaged by the left, by the academics, than the police? And they're being called pigs on these campuses today. So I'm grateful that they are willing to do their job, a job no one thanks them for, a job no one appreciates, but a job they now have to do. No one else can do it. The campus police can't handle these things. No offense to them, but this is way bigger than any university's on-site force. We're talking about the college campuses. University of Southern California has now canceled. Oops, that was my glasses hitting the microphone. Sorry. Has just canceled their. I'm now at the age, just so you know, where I'm whipping on and off those readers. So that's going to happen occasionally. Anyway, they canceled their main commencement and tried to make it sound like a good thing. Oh, we're going to have a lot of other events. Listen, when you go to college, walking the stage, getting your diploma, like graduating, it's kind of like the focal point. I was thinking, if you're class of 24, you've had quite a ride. COVID disrupted your high school years. You probably had to do distance learning. You probably didn't. You might not have had a graduation from high school if you graduated in the summer of 20. And now you are at USC, and they're not going to let you graduate there. And you're probably doing some Zoom classes now. I don't know if they're one of the campuses that's doing virtual learning, but several have caved into that. Well, we'll just keep the kids in the dorms and give the campus grounds over to the protesters. So we're talking about that. And we're talking about Trump on trial, the Bulwark, which is no fan of Trump, in a column by Mark Caputo, says that the trial is making him into the Nelson Mandela of America. Very interesting image. 210-599-5555. This is a little bit different, but we just had the NCAA tournament in college basketball, just wrapped up, and next year's is in San Antonio. The men's Final Four will be in San Antonio. And they were talking about it on a sports talk show, one of the national ones. And they were talking also about Victor Wembanyama. And these guys started talking about how San Antonio is a boring city and that Wemby is not going to get in any trouble because you can't get in any trouble in such a boring city. He won't be tempted by drugs and alcohol. He won't do anything that will bring ill repute to him or damage his value or his image, because you can't. Nothing bad happens here. Kind of downplaying the idea that he's a mature guy and he seems to have his head screwed on straight. I thought it was an interesting observation. I don't take offense by it, and I'll explain why in a minute. And I'm not going to bother naming these guys and giving them more publicity. Why should I use my show to make them more famous? So forget who they are. But the point is, I will just say, I think that's kind of giving him the short end of the stick, Wemby, because I would think the reason he probably, and who knows, God forbid he might get in trouble, but the reason he seems like a good guy and everybody likes him and respects him and you're not hearing anything negative about him, he's not having Ja Morant problems, is probably more because of who he is than because of who we are. Number one. Like, he's probably, and I know this won't make sense to these stooges on sports talk radio, but he might have been like a well-raised kid. He might have been brought up right. He might have, like, you know, a good heart. Just saying. Two, yeah, if you want to call San Antonio boring because we don't have the stuff that makes those other big cities so sassy and exciting, okay. I'm good with that. I don't envy, I don't know about you, but I don't envy San Francisco, Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, Boston. I don't envy them. I don't wish we were more like them. I don't wish we had all the trappings or the things they have. I don't. You know, maybe in time he will, and if he does, he'll be a free agent and he'll go. San Antonio is a boring city. Okay, well, the way cities are going these days, I would take that as a compliment. That's like high praise. We don't have drama. 210-599-5555. Let's talk about that. I was writing my column today for KTSA.com about being on board a UFO. Don't worry, I've not been day drinking. But sometimes I like to think about how we look or how we would look to somebody looking down on us from far, 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 far away. So just imagine for a minute there's some extraterrestrial life form in another galaxy Doesn't matter what they look like or where they are. They're millions of miles away. They're eons ahead of us in development and technology. And maybe they look like us and maybe they don't look like us. And maybe they have two arms and two legs and two eyes. And maybe they have, you know, five eyes and three arms. I don't know. Doesn't matter. But they're checking us out. They're looking down on Earth. And they've got this super powerful telescope. And let's say they zoom it in. They crank the knobs and they zoom it in on the United States. They're looking down right now on our political landscape. This is a political year. And they're sorting out what's going on. What is that bunch of people down there doing? And they would figure out who the players are, right? They would figure out our political divisions. And the left, this is how I think it would look to them from far away. The left in this country is split between sympathy for Palestinians and sympathy for Israeli Jews, but unwilling to defend Jews in the Western world. No bravery for that at all. The right is divided over Ukraine and is weirdly considering the symbolic sacrifice of their own legislative leader over it. Like it would matter. Like if you deposed Mike Johnson, it would matter. They would look down at the left and they would see that the left thinks America is wicked and sinful and guilty of everything and it can't be the world's policeman, but it's not too dirty to be the world's ATM machine. And the right, they would see, is divided between anti-interventionists and pseudo-hawks. So the right, on the right, you have people that believe we should shut ourselves off from the whole world, or people who have never met a war they didn't want to get involved in. And I think that would be very puzzling. All of that that I just listed would be very puzzling to these faraway people. And I think they'd be amused by the similarities in the political parties. Like for all the drama and intensity of the combat between the political parties, the battle over elections and the red on the map and the blue on the map, and they're so similar. It would be apparent to these faraway observers that both sides put way too much confidence in government and way too little in people. And they trust government when they control it, and they don't trust it when they don't. They talk a great game about civil liberties and we the people and Big Brother when they're not in power. But then when they get power, they are Big Brother. Both sides. Come on, right? Don't make me remind you of George Bush. I think it'd be interesting to see us through their, you know, very far away eyes. Mark writes to Jack at KTSA.com, I'm still upset that when my daughter graduated from UTSA in the summer of 2020, there was no graduation ceremony. Her diploma showed up in the mail. She was the first of my mom's grandkids to graduate from college, but she didn't get to cross the stage. What's happening now is even less of an excuse to cancel graduation ceremonies. USC today saying they would cancel their main graduation ceremony but would hold other events. But you know that what they're just trying to do is disperse the event so that the protesters can't cover all the different venues or times. It's a really sad, to my mind, to my thinking at least, it's a really sad kind of concession. Or surrender. Like, we can agree to disagree about the Middle East, and we always will, I'm sure. But am I wrong? I mean, do you not want some fight in your great institutions in sort of the great public institutions? Do you not want somebody at some point? Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I should just shut the hell up and go do something else. But and yesterday I said I would go wash dirty cars. Maybe I should just do that. But I mean, do you not want them to draw a line and go, you, no more? We're not giving you any more. We gave you the statues. We gave you the building names. We've given more than we should have. It's on us that we even gave you that much, but no more. And I don't see any lines being drawn. I don't see any limits. And so for the mob, that's intoxicating. That's, you know, that's throwing gasoline on the fire. Every day, in every way, they are winning. So the police show up once in a while and push them back a little bit, or they take down a few tents. But what they see is we just got a major university in this country to cancel its graduation, which is still 2 weeks away, because they presume we would ruin it for them. And I'm just curious. I mean, are people okay with this? Well, it's just the new normal. Maybe it is. So we asked this question on the poll today because apparently this is a debate. This is a thing. Everybody's getting in on it on social media. If you go to Bucky's and you pull up to the pump to pump gas into your vehicle and you finish and you pay at the pump, most people pay at the pump, then you go into the store to buy some things or use the bathroom. Is it okay to leave your car there at the pump? Some people say yes. Some people say hell no. I think if you bought gas, you put the gas in your car, you paid for the gas at the pump, yeah, you can go and get your stuff. If you want to move the car to a non-pump parking space, you can do that too. I don't think you have to. Now, what I would disagree with is, the only thing I would say, in my rules of the road, you can't use the pump as a parking space if you're not buying gas. Like, that's not right. You're tying up a pump. Somebody needs gas. So that would be kind of rude and uncalled for. But otherwise, no. Of course, you can leave your car where it is, go get your coffee or your nuggets or whatever it is you're going to get. What do you think? Today's JR poll, 210-599-5555. Grab a line. All right, so you get to Bucky's, you pump the gas, you pay at the pump, you decide you want to go into Bucky's to buy some stuff or use the restroom. Is it okay to leave your car now that you've bought the gas? Yes. Yes, it is. I mean, if you want to move your car closer to the store or to a non-pump parking space, okay. But yes, I would do that. I have done that. It is not okay. I think it's kind of nasty, kind of gnarly to use a pump space as a parking space when you're not buying gas. I think that's kind of, you know, not cool. But that would be my rules of the road, and that's what we're asking you on the JR poll today, powered by River City Oral Surgery, a little Bucky's etiquette. 210-599-5555. We're going to sort that out, see what you think. University of Southern California tonight has canceled their main commencement ceremony as part of what they describe as safety measures in the wake of anti-Israeli demonstrations on campus that have seen over 100 arrested. The commencement ceremony was scheduled for May 10th. USC says we'll just have a lot of other little events here and there instead of the traditional main commencement event. Now, I don't know how they do it there, but at my university, which was a big university, you had a main commencement, and then you had the commencement for your college. Like, I went to the College of Communication, so they had a graduation ceremony. I don't know if those are going to happen. Obviously, those are on a smaller scale. Those are not in the main arena or stadium or whatever. I think mine was on, like, the lawn of the college, you know. And then maybe there are other events as well and other ceremonies. But look, I think every inch you're giving, you're going to regret. I think the pictures on our screens right now are a direct result of all the concessions, all the caving from 2020. And I just, this is not the way to go. There is something about universities, I don't know why we have to tell them this, you would think they would know it. There's something about colleges and universities that they're supposed to be the repositories of what's important. I mean, when you have an important archive or an important man or woman passes away, their papers are enshrined and curated at a university because everybody assumes that's the safest, smartest, most useful place for them to be. Great man dies, his papers go to his university or a university. And ideas should also be protected there. Concepts of right and wrong and Western civilization's mores should be safe there. We should not have to be telling them this. They should know it. It's what they're all about. It's what they're for. The oldest universities in our country were actually founded by men of the cloth, by men who believed that there was a duality to preserving the kingdom of God and the kingdom of man behind those ivy-covered walls. That's how serious the mission was and how important it was and is. And so, I'm sorry, but when you cave like this, you are doing it all wrong. And by the way, no one is safer. The more emboldened these mobs are, no one is safer. Don't tell me you made the decision is for safety. 210-599-5555. All right, we're talking about Buc-ee's and parking at Buc-ee's, and you go to get gas, but you also want to go in the store. Should you park at the pump or move from the pump after you got your gas? And Deborah is on KTSA. Deborah, good afternoon.
Hi. I think that's an example of ultimate rudeness. If after you get your gas, you don't immediately move forward, especially if there's a long line behind you, no, you don't sit there at all. I once saw a woman that was sitting there, apparently she was starting to get her gas. Mm. Her phone rang, she put the gas back, and she talked on the phone to somebody without moving her car. I thought that was absolutely outrageous. But in terms of, there is no time when somebody should not move their car. When they finish getting their gas, move.
Gotcha.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you, Deborah.
It's rude not to.
Okay.
Anyway. Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Deborah. Ted is on the Jack Riccardi Show. Hi, Ted.
Hi, Jack. Gosh, I thought I was going to be the conservative gas pumper person here, but man. So, you know, this is a very complicated question. And going back to...
No, it's not a complicated question. The two-state solution is a complicated question. This is the gas pump at Buc-ee's, Ted.
Okay, well, let's set the scenario. It's 8:30 in the morning.
Okay.
Let's say it's necessarily not Buc-ee's. Let's say it's the big ATB. And you probably well know, oftentimes you'll go to a gas station and several of the pumps will have the yellow covers on the handles,
right,
meaning that they're not available, so that reduces the number.
Right.
Then you'll have someone who, I have nothing, there's nothing wrong with, you go up, pay for your gas, dispense it. You maybe go in the store and grab a Red Bull or something, but some people will get the gas, go in the store, go grocery shopping, maybe play a little, quarter game, use the restroom, pull the gambling machine two or three times, maybe get another bag of chicks, then they'll come out, you know? And, like, there's a whole line there. Or worse...
Okay, hold on, Ted. Ted, I love you. Ted, I love you, but you've completely changed, you've completely changed my question. You're answering your own question. You're not answering mine. And that's fine. I hear you,
okay.
But there's a reason I asked it about there's a reason I asked it about Buc-ee's. Of course,
because
you should not go
lanes.
To a. Pardon me?
Because they have so many lanes. Yes, sure.
Right.
It's like there's an unlimited number of gas pumps at Buc-ee's. It seems like.
Well, it's not unlimited, but they have a lot of them. I think it would be a much different consideration if you went to a traditional convenience store or to an HEB gas thing where they only have the few pumps, And also, yes, I mean, if you left your car at the HEB gas pumps and went into HEB, that's complete, you know, a-holery. I mean, there's no defending that at all. But if you go to Bucky's and you buy the gas and then you dash in there to get your snack, you bought the gas. You gave them your gas business. I don't think you have to move the car.
I can do that. I could go with that. It's just that the people that pull up and, as the previous caller mentioned, proceed to conduct business. Maybe they open their laptop. They're sitting there.
No. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, no, it's not. You don't camp out there. Yeah. I agree with that. You're right about that. Okay. I think you're right about that, Ted. Thank you. Ted was doing his own show there. He just got a completely different. I don't like Jack's scenario. I'm just going to do a completely different scenario. 210-599-5555. We're at Bucky's. Stay with me at Bucky's, okay? That's where we are. And you get gas, and you do that first because you need it, and you pay at the pump, and you've done that, and then you decide you'd like to get something, or you need to go in there for something. Do you need to move the car, or can you run in and get it and come back? What is your etiquette on that? Charles is next on the radio. Hi, Charles.
Hey, Jack. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm good, good. Hey, I kind of agree with you, but I don't. We went to Katy today. We live 100 miles from San Antonio. Stopped at the biggest Bucky's right now until Luling opens.
Mm-hmm.
And as we pull in to get gas, you can't hardly find any kind of pumps. And we drove by some people eating their lunch or whatever on their trunk at the gas pump.
Yeah, that's rude.
Come on.
I mean, that's just lazy.
Yeah, just pull out of the way. It, you know, like you said, you go in, you get your stuff, that's fine. So, you know, don't eat lunch on
Let's say this. The gas pump spot is not a spot to be sitting in, right? Either you should be pumping gas or you should be in the store, but you should not be sitting there eating or talking on the phone or looking at your computer, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems
reasonable.
I pulled up to one of the spots that was open, and when I came out, my wife didn't get out, but when I came out, the person that was in front of us, nobody was in the vehicle, and that car's still there.
That's not right.
5 minutes.
Yeah, that's not right.
So
I'm with you on that. I think we more agree than disagree on this one, Charles.
That was good, Jack. Thank you.
All right. Drive safe, and thanks for calling our show. I see everybody's got an opinion about this, and it's funny because here's where I come down on it. And I'm easily aggravated, and I'm always complaining about something. I mean, this guy on the radio, right? But I look at it like to fill my tank is like $60. I am okay with going in and getting my coffee and sandwich and coming back out again, or hitting the head and coming back out again. I don't have to move the car for that because I just gave them $60. I feel like I've rented that spot for that amount of time. I agree that you don't come back out and sit in your car. You don't put the seat back and take a nap at the gas pump. You don't eat your food at the gas pump. I wouldn't do that. Would never do that. And yeah, obviously, if people are waiting for a gas pump, get the hell out of there, obviously. But come on, Bucky's has like 400 pumps. I mean, you can do it. 210-599-5555. Tim is on the radio. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Jack. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. I think they've covered all the bases on this one, but I was just listening to you. It seems like what you're saying is if you pay money to the store, to Bucky's, that is not the casino that the earlier caller had, but yes, you use their services, but it comes down to just a common sense is what it comes down to, which some people just don't follow anymore. And Bucky's, like you have said, has 109 different pumps, and I'm surprised that the guy couldn't find the pump that the Bucky's are calling for me. But I always pay inside. come out, pop, and then move, because it's just a courtesy to other drivers. Mm-hmm. But I'm used to other fueling stations, like a Valero's, whatever. I know that's not the topic, and they can be tight, and people can be impatient. But Bucky's is kind of a touristy deal, you know, and you can drop a lot of money in that place. I haven't been to one in a while, but it seems like they have a plethora of fuel pumps there that it's not an issue. But if someone's sitting in their car talking on their phone and having their lunch, of course, that's just pure ED.
And if you're in there shopping around, looking at everything and buying lap blankets and wall plaques and T-shirts, then move your car. Don't leave your car.
Zebrahead or whatever you're talking about. You know? But renting the space, I don't know. But for what you use it for, and then move along. But, hey, Bucky's is one heck of a place. You know, give me corn nuts and $100, I'm pumped 83, you know.
It does, I will say, it does take the pain, a little bit of the pain out of what you pay at the pump when you can go in there and get something really good, right? That does feel a little bit better.
Hey, that makes it all worth the while.
Tim, good to hear from you. Thanks for the call. Jack Riccardi Show on 550 and 107.1 KTSA. Coming up, Throwback Thursday. We're going back to 1971 for this week in 71, the top 10, and a few other things. You go to Bucky's. You're going to get gas, you pull up to the pump, you pump into your vehicle, and you pay at the pump, and then you decide to go in. Before you go in, do you need to move the vehicle out of the pump space into a non-pump space, or can you leave it in the pump space while you get your stuff and come back out? And what about other things, like lingering even longer in the pump space? 210-599-5555. Emilio is on the radio. Emilio, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. I've parked next to the pump that has a yellow bag on the handle. Even without, of course, I can't buy any gas, but just to go inside and get snacks.
That's really not the question, though. The question is, if you buy gas, so you're a gas customer, and then you decide to go in, do you need to move the car?
I think you should, but I've been guilty of not doing it. I stay there and real quickly, if I don't think I'm going to take too long, I'll go get my snacks and come right back.
That's a good answer.
And some people do it for the shade. I know QT's doesn't have any shade trees anywhere. All the QT's are the same way, no trees. So people, I'm sure they're going to be tempted to park underneath the cover.
Yeah.
But, I've been guilty, but I'm not going to park at the pump without buying gas unless it has the yellow bag on my handle.
Yeah. No, that's right. You got to buy gas to park at the pump. That's. I think we all agree on that. All right, Emilio, thank you. Appreciate it. Flora is on the Jack Riccardi Show with this. Hi, Flora.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
It's Thursday.
Well, is that good or bad?
That's good. It's my Friday. Tomorrow's Battle of the Fire.
Oh, excellent. Oh, very nice. Yeah. Happy Friday to you.
Thank you. I feel that there's no way to decipher, that there's no right or wrong answer, but there's no way to decipher, you know, if this person is going to, you know, go pay at the pump and then go inside, grab a snack and then leave. There's no way to decipher from one person to another. Some people have common sense. Some people don't. I don't know why they call it common sense. It's not common. So, and it's courteous. It's a matter of being courteous to your fellow, you know, human. A lot of people don't care. So, I know that HEB downtown San Antonio already does that. If you pay at the pump, you move it along. If you want to go inside, you cannot stay at the pump. You got to move it along and go find a parking.
How do they make you do that? How do they? I've never been to that one. How do they make you move it?
The one on South Flores, they have security there, so always watching outside, walking around.
Wow.
So they see you pay at the pump and you try to go inside the store and quote unquote rent your space. They're going to snap. You're going to have to move.
Gotcha. Okay.
Go find a parking.
But getting back to Bucky's, where they have a lot of pumps, and usually they're not all taken, do you need to move it?
I personally don't feel like I should move it. I'm a paying customer. I'm paying for gas, and then I want to go inside, and I want to pay again. Why be inconvenienced to try to go and find another parking? But I'm also a courteous person. I'm going to go in, get out, and get on with my life. A lot of people don't do that. They linger. Right. They just sit there. Yeah. You know, I just don't think that's right.
I agree. So, get on with your life. You seem like a no-nonsense person, Flora, and I'm glad today is your Friday. Do you have big weekend plans? Are you going to Fiesta or anything?
I already went to Fiesta last week, so I'm kind of a little fiestaed out.
Oh, okay.
Just this weekend, just chill at home and rest and relax.
And watch the storms come through, right?
Watch the storms come through, yeah. My favorite, one of my favorite pastimes, I love to do that because, you know.
Yeah, me too. Very relaxing.
I love storms. It is. It really
Very
is.
Nice. I like the plan, Flora. You take care. Thank you for calling our show. 210-599-5555. All right, we're having the great Buc-ee's debate, and Curtis is next on the radio. Hi, Curtis.
Hi. Well, if I'm like just at a 7-Eleven or something like that, and I'm going to get gas and I want to run in and get a soda and a candy bar or something like that, I'll leave it there and go get my stuff and come back. Uh-huh. However, if I'm at Buc-ee's,
which is the question,
then I move it. I move it and find a regular parking spot because nobody's running in and out of Buc-ee's. When you get in Buc-ee's, there are a million shiny things in there to get your attention, and yeah, so you need to move it.
Oh, hey, no. Speak for yourself. I just get a coffee and sometimes a sandwich with it. I'm in and out in no time. I don't go looking at all the damn souvenirs and, you know, pocket knives and wooden calendars. No. I'm not a tourist. I live here.
Yeah, but my wife's always on me because if I go to Buc-ee's, I'm getting a new travel mug. I'm getting a new travel mug for my coffee.
Oh, you're that guy, huh? How many do you have? I know people that have like so many Yeti tumblers, and what are you preparing for?
Well, you know, when one gets dirty, you don't have to wash it right away.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And grab another. And
gotta keep on the move.
Yep. And like if I'm going to work, then I'll just use a 20-ounce tumbler for my coffee.
Okay.
Whereas if I'm going somewhere to run errands or something, I'll get the big 30 out.
There you go.
Yeah.
Curtis, thank you, sir. Appreciate having you. Appreciate your call. John Cooper, I mean, how many times have I said it? You go to Buc-ee's. You pump gas in your car at Buc-ee's.
Yes.
Then you go into the store at Buc-ee's. Every other caller. Well, when I'm at 7-Eleven. Well, when I'm at Stripes. Well, when I go to...
Not everyone has had the Buc-ee's experience. So
Buc-ee's is different. Buc-ee's is different. Yeah. The rules are different. Everything's different. And like several of the callers have pointed out, you're not going to really lose a lot of time in most convenience stores, right? Like you go to the average, you know, corner store, Valero, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like you're not walking up and down every aisle. Oh, look, they got fan belts and STP. Look at this.
Well, it's also somewhat of a tourist location,
right?
And I think your mindset changes the moment you drive into
it. Does
a Buc-ee's.
You do see mm-hmm. people when they get in there? They get a little they get a little overwhelmed. They might not have meant to spend the amount of time they spend. I kind of think though, when you go in Valero, you know you'll be leaving pretty quickly. No offense to Valero. I don't want to get them angry at me. Right. That's all I need.
Or just any other service station.
Any
Let's
other
put it that
yes,
way.
Mobile, mm-hmm. Shell, any of them.
Yes. I mean, who wants to stay in a
Hess.
The service station parking lot.
Not really.
But Buc-ee's is a whole thing because it's almost like Disneyland somewhere.
There you go. That's a little exaggerated, but okay. Yeah. All right. I know you don't get out much, so I'll let you get away with that.
It is now time. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the final countdown. Music.
I love music.
Top 10 board. We'll start with number 10.
Throwback Thursday, we're in the year 1971. This week in 1971, President Richard Nixon installs a secret taping system in the White House. What could go wrong? Bangladesh declares its independence from Pakistan. And Life magazine's cover story on the Frazier-Ali fight. Words by Norman Mailer, photos by Frank Sinatra. If you've never seen that, you got to check it out. This week in 1971 is all about the Canadians, the Brits, and Motown. So let's get started with the song at number 10. And it belongs to a group called the Bells, originally called the Five Bells. They were from Canada and South Africa, lived together on a farm for a while. which is a very 1971 thing, and had this week's number 10 hit, Stay a While. Stay a While was also the title of a documentary about this band that was made about 10 years ago, The Bells and Stay a While. Now, at number 9 is the singer who sang for the first time in his life while he was still in primary school. He stood on a desk and sang a song he had heard on the radio, and his classmates applauded. And that's how Tom Jones knew he had the gift, getting that standing ovation from his classmates and singing number 9's tune this week, She's a Lady.
She's a lady. Oh, 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 she's a lady. Talking about that little lady. And the lady is mine.
Song written by Paul Anka. It's turned out to be Tom Jones' biggest hit at number 9 this week. She's a Lady. The song at number 8 this week is by the band Bread, and it was the shortest song title to become a top 10 hit until Prince hit the top 10 in 1993 with a song called Seven. This one is If. Beautiful love song by the band Bread. If is the hottest hit of this week, moving up 12 spots to number 8. Later re-recorded as a spoken word version by Telly Savalas and covered on live television by Olivia Newton-John, one of the first times she performed for an American audience on the Dean Martin Show. She sang the song If. Now we're up to the song at number 7 this week. It was written by Norman Whitfield, who just got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And it's from The Temptations, Just My Imagination, Running Away With Me.
To have a girl like her is truly a dream come true.
A cool song, sung by a man who imagines a relationship with a woman he loves, realizes he's daydreaming, and yet during the song seems to shift into reality. He says, in reality, she doesn't even know me. And this was also the last time Eddie Kendricks sang with the Temps before he started his own very successful solo career. Now we're up to the song at number 6 this week in the year 1971. You know, we almost lost Neil Diamond to medical school at one point in the 60s, but instead he went to work as a songwriter in the famous Brill Building in New York City, and here he is at number 6 this week with I Am, I Said.
But nowadays I'm lost between two shores. LA's fine, but it ain't home. New York's home, but it ain't mine, no. To no one there, and no one heard at all, not even the chair. I am, I cried.
Neil Diamond racing up the charts in April of 1971 with I Am, I Said. People often ask me, what's Paul McCartney up to these days? Actually, no one ever asks me that. But I'll tell you, on Monday night, the former Beatle treated his wife Nancy to a cozy dinner at a posh Italian restaurant in Beverly Hills, and then they slipped out of the back entrance and raced away into the night in his Corvette. Just another day for Paul McCartney.
The office where the papers grow, she takes a break, drinks another coffee, and she finds it hard to stay awake. It's just another day. It's just another day. It's just another day.
Paul's first post-Beatles single and a standalone song. It was not originally included on his first solo album, McCartney. Now, number four is a song that was originally written for the Supremes, but given by Motown to the Jackson 5. It's Never Can Say Goodbye. Later on, covered by Gloria Gaynor and the British band The Communards. That's the Jackson 5 version of Never Can Say Goodbye. It's up 9 spots to number 4 this week in 1971. The song at number 3 this week is kind of a hippie gospel song by a Canadian band called Ocean, covering an old Anne Murray tune, Put Your Hand in the Hand. Song found a whole new audience for the band Ocean. They got fan letters from Billy Graham and the Bishop of Toronto as a result of Put Your Hand in the Hand. The song at number 2 has an interesting story behind it. The inspiration for it came from Obie Benson, a member of the Four Tops, after he and the band's tour bus arrived at Berkeley on May 15th, 1969. They witnessed the violence of the protests being held in People's Park during what was later called Bloody Thursday. And upset by the situation, Benson said to author Ben Edmonds that as he saw it, he asked himself, what is happening here? What is going on here? Why are they sending kids so far away from their families overseas? He discussed what he had seen with a friend and fellow songwriter, Al Cleveland. They in turn wrote and composed a song to reflect Benson's questions and concerns. The Four Tops didn't want to sing it because they thought it was too much of a protest song. And Benson said, no, it's a love song. It's about love and understanding. Well, it wound up in the hands of Marvin Gaye, who was asking himself a lot of the same questions Obie Benson was asking himself. And this week, it's the number 2 song in all the land. What's going on?
Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on? What's going on? Yeah, what's going on?
Now, just as the Four Tops didn't want to sing this song when it was presented to them, Motown wasn't so sure they wanted Marvin Gaye to sing it either. But he pushed back on Berry Gordy. And really, when I think about this song and when I hear it now, as much as any song I think I've ever heard, What's Going On by Marvin Gaye is an obvious break for a singer. He is changing his style. He's challenging his fans to follow him, and for the most part, his fans did. The number two song this week is What's Going On. In 1971, that takes us to the number one position.
Number one.
The song at number one this week is a song written by Hoyt Axton and made famous by the band Three Dog Night. It is described by members of the band as a kid's song and a silly song. Axton himself says some of the words are nonsensical, and what had happened was he had written a melody, and in order to demo it for the producers, he had to just sing any words that came to mind. And that explains some of the lyrics to Joy to the World. Even Three Dog Night wasn't so sure they liked these lyrics, "Jeremiah was a prophet." They didn't like that line, so they changed it to this line.
Jeremiah was a bullfrog, was a good friend of mine. I never understood a single word he said, but I helped him a drink his wine. And he always had somebody fine wine, sing joy to the world. All the boys and girls now, joy to the fishes in the deep blue sea, joy to you and me. If I were the king.
Here's a fun fact about Joy to the World by Three Dog Night. When this song made it to number one, Hoyt Axton and his mother, Mae Axton, became the first mother and son to each have written a number one pop single in the rock era. Hoyt with this song, and Mae Axton co-writing Heartbreak Hotel, which was a number one hit for Elvis. All right, so which one of those songs is not going to be stuck in your head the rest of the night? Which one of those is going to, like, you're not going to be able to get rid of it? Will it be Never Can Say Goodbye? Will it be She's a Lady? Or will it be Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog? I'll tell you something. We had an elementary school. I was in elementary school. You had music class every day. You went down to the auditorium, your little second grade group or whatever went down to the auditorium and had music class. And I remember, like, between kindergarten and first grade, or maybe first grade and second grade, this very sort of older, traditional, very sweet lady retired as the music teacher. She had been the music teacher there for decades, you know. She retired. I forget her name. And the new music teacher came in. Her name was Miss Doc. It's funny I would remember that. And she was hip. She was young. All of a sudden, every day in music class, we were singing Yellow Submarine and The Carpenters. And we sang, I remember, a bunch of little kids sitting cross-legged on the floor singing Joy to the World. And that's probably the last time in my life that I did anything that was cute. But that was pretty cute, I have to say, hearing a bunch of little kids sing that song. So anyway, I thought I'd share that with you. In case it is stuck in your head, at least you have a positive association with it. We got a lot to talk about in our next hour. I remember when I was a kid and you'd watch the news at night, the weather guy would come on. We had a guy named Don Kent when I was a kid in Boston. He'd been on the air since television was invented. Remember when Don Cooper, you'll remember this because you're old enough to remember like I am. Remember when the weather guy would draw on the map? The map was just like basically a piece of plastic or or maybe it was plexiglass or something. But remember, they'd have like grease pencils, yeah, and they would just draw clouds and fronts and lightning bolts.
Get that squeaky sound when they're doing their drawings. Yes, huh?
And they were, you know, and it was really something that they had to do that and talk and keep talking at the same time. And to me, when I see the courtroom artists, I am reminded of the days when the TV weather guys had to draw on the map, like. This is the last sort of throwback thing left on television. Like today when they were reporting on the Trump trial, they have those courtroom artist sketches that always look like abstract art. You know, Trump looks like Carly Simon. And they draw these really garish colors and they exaggerate, you know, the facial features, you know. No matter, even if you're good looking, you're not going to be good looking in the courtroom artist, you know.
Oh, Trump is a victim of that, no doubt about it. I mean, they exaggerate his hair
Yeah, he looks like he's melting. And yeah, it just like the molecules of his body are coming apart. But anyway,
I do have a question.
Why do we still have those? Before you ask yours, let me just ask mine. Why do we still need those? Do we really need those? We know what these people look like. And, you know, there's cameras in the courtroom, and they take still photographs, right? We've seen photographs of Trump in the courtroom. Why do we need the courtroom? I don't want to put him out of work. Maybe he's a nice guy, but do we really need the courtroom artist in 2024?
That was my question. Why can't they use actual photographs?
Yeah, let's just go with that.
Yeah.
Let's just go with that. Unless maybe the argument, maybe an argument would be, hey, Jack, you know, it's kind of a throwback. It's kind of nice nostalgia. Okay, I could buy that, I guess. Let's go through a few, speaking of Trump, let's go through a few numbers here that, you know, with the caveat that polls are what they are. I read these earlier on the show. This is from Bloomberg. This just came out today. Swing states, according to Bloomberg and Morning Consult, in North Carolina, Trump up 10 on Biden, 51-41. And if you put RFK in there, he's up 10, 48-38-5. Nevada, Trump is up 8, 51-43 against Biden. He's up 14 over Biden in Nevada if you put in RFK, 48-34-7. The unfavorable numbers for both candidates are awful. Just people are not happy with either one of them personally. But what's starting to settle out and sort itself out is that people are getting by that. They're getting past that. Like, if both candidates are personally unpopular, then personal popularity doesn't become really a thing anymore. And people are not thrilled with the performance of this current president. Bidenomics, you'll notice, has disappeared from the White House lexicon. They're not putting it on those backdrops and signs when President Biden makes appearances. For a while, they were. He was using the word like they were proud of it, like they'd invented a brand. Well, the brand has gone away. And the economy is a huge issue. Bloomberg says it is still the issue. When you look at other issues, on most of the major issues people cite, they believe Trump would do a better job. Abortion is an important issue, according to Morning Consult Bloomberg. 75% of voters think it's either very important or somewhat important. And that's why Biden is talking about it so much right now. Is it a deciding issue? I still don't know. Biden also beats Trump on climate change, but only 3% of voters in this survey say that's their most important issue. The border is absolutely a disaster for Biden. It's a landslide for Trump over Biden on the border. And at this point, it looks like even pivoting on the border wouldn't help Biden. Because voters know, if this is something that's important to them, voters just seem to know that no matter what Biden does between now and November, Trump has been and will be better on the issue. And by the way, there's a Harris poll, and that's Bloomberg. There's a Harris poll today that says half of Americans, including a whopping 42% of Democrats, favor mass deportations of illegal immigrants. Axios reporting on the latest Harris poll. 46% of Republicans and 30% of Democrats would end birthright citizenship. Mark Penn of the Harris poll says he was shocked by these numbers. So, as I said yesterday, always play like your team is behind, even when they're not. Do not get complacent. Do not assume or presume that things have gotten so bad under Biden he can't possibly win. You don't need me to tell you why, but just don't. But what is this sort of asymmetrical presidential campaign doing to these two candidates? And by asymmetrical, I mean Joe Biden is making public campaign-looking appearances every day. They're carefully controlled. They're limited to very small groups, hardly anyone there. But on television, it looks like he's campaigning for re-election, and Trump is not. Trump is in a courtroom. Trump is being drawn with crayon while Biden is on live TV. The bulwark, which is a never-Trump website, a bunch of writers that are conservatives or Republicans, or they're kind of the MSNBC brand of Republicans. They had a piece today entitled "How the Nelson Mandela of America is Making Bank Off His Criminal Trial." They're kind of dinging Trump for raising money off of his legal travails. He sends out fundraising emails. "I'm in court. I should really be on the campaign trail. Biden's corrupt, etc." And he's raking in the money. Well, they're kind of, you know, shaking their head or wrinkling their forehead at that. But it is interesting to note that Trump, who's way behind in the fundraising, I mean, exponentially behind Biden in the fundraising, is actually raising money off of this. And we talked this week about how he and his team seem to have wrung all the advantages out of having to be in court that you possibly can, making select campaign appearances in New York, doing things like visiting that bodega last week, coming out and talking about issues to the gaggle of reporters outside the courthouse or inside the courthouse, and sort of talking a lot on Truth Social and X about how the judge is biased and this should never have been brought to trial. And the Bulwark is saying he's becoming the Nelson Mandela of American politics. And the thing about Nelson Mandela was that he was obviously imprisoned by and a victim of the regime he opposed, but ultimately his imprisonment became his brand. And to this day, you go around the world, if people know one thing about Nelson Mandela, they know that he went to prison. But when he came out of prison, he was the unquestioned leader, most powerful, most influential man in his country. And so the comparison, I get it. I mean, I get where they're going with it. They think it's a knock. But I think it's actually, and I said this yesterday, I think it's actually backfiring. Now let's talk about the actual case. You've heard this week the breathless recaps of the testimony of this guy, David Pecker, who was the owner of the company that published, among other things, the National Enquirer. David Pecker was a friend of Donald Trump's. So not so much a political ally, but just going back to way before Trump was in politics, they were friends. And one of the things that's come out in the testimony is that Pecker sees himself as a friend of Trump and did the things he did as a friend of Trump and made assumptions about the things he did. Like, for example, you're hearing the words catch and kill. David Pecker would buy someone's story, the rights to it, so that he owned the rights to tell it. But upon owning the rights to tell it, he then didn't tell it. It would be like if you bought a car, but you put it in the garage and didn't drive it. You can do that. It's not what we expect you to do, but you can do it because you bought it. So he put the car in the garage and didn't drive it. And he says he did that out of friendship. He said he did that to not embarrass Trump in his marriage or marriages. But they're trying to say Trump and Pecker knew that the catching and killing of the stories was crucial to Trump winning the 2016 election. The other thing that's interesting, and I don't know if they anticipated this or not, but Pecker says that catch and kill is something that he and his company did for many, many people. And he says, and I don't know if we have names, but he says he did it for many, many politicians and like celebrities. So there was an embarrassing story, there was an affair, there was the allegation of an affair or something that would be not so great for your image. And as a favor, and probably for access or other interviews or other things, you know, maybe the chance to get an interview, an exclusive with you later on for something else, he says he would often buy these things sign the NDAs with the person who was telling the story, and then bury them. And it makes it sound like, A, the guy was in this business, and B, he was kind of a celebrity jock sniffer. You know, like, I'm sorry to use that language, but it doesn't sound like a specific, we're going to get Trump elected president, as much as it just sounds like this is the world that David Pecker liked to live in and move in. And I'm sure as a businessman, he was getting his, you know, pound of flesh somewhere along the line. This had to in some way favor him or come back to him in some way. But it just doesn't sound like a crime. It just sounds like, oh, I didn't know that's how it worked. Or maybe I did know that's how it worked. By the way, speaking of crime, I don't think they're making a very good argument for a campaign finance violation here. I mean, I understand that, and we've said this before, the Federal Election Commission and two preceding district attorneys passed on a election violation case here. Not only is the Manhattan DA not the enforcement body for federal election violations, but why would he somehow know the law or perceive a case that was not known or perceived by the people whose business it is to do it? It doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense. I heard an analyst today on Fox say something. I don't remember which one it was, but he said something very interesting. He said, you can point all this out, and you can say it to people that are at home watching television or listening to radio or following the trial from outside, but none of that matters if you're the jury, because the jury isn't getting somebody's analysis or filtering or footnoting or explanation. And in the eyes and ears of the jury, they're just getting the prosecution's setup of these facts. It may be that as much as we can see there's no case here, it looks very, very different to the jury. Tesla just had a terrible quarterly report. I think it was a day or two ago. They had an earnings report, and it was 10% below the first quarter of 2023. It's the largest decline the company has seen since the early days of Tesla. And it's just kind of continuing a pattern that we're seeing with the EV market, with declining growth in sales, with dealers punching out and telling the manufacturers, we can't sell the quantity of these that you're sending us, and we need you to send us things we can sell. And by the way, a lot of dealers are saying, look, customers will buy hybrids, they just don't want to go all electric. I've seen now a few times what looks like a new Ford ad. I saw it during the Final Four, and I've seen it a few times since then. And I was kind of, I don't know, maybe overanalyzing it, but it said things like, however you power up. Now, recently, a lot of car company ads have been like, almost like propaganda messages about electric vehicles, right? Everybody's doing it. Why aren't you? You know, and I just thought the language seemed a lot more humble. However you power up, said Ford. And then another line was, the power is yours. Almost as if to say, we want you no matter what kind of propulsion you're interested in. There was a line in the ad that said, it's not how you do it, it's what you do with it. And just wondering if they aren't sort of, in a very subtle way, signaling, hey, we're rethinking our commitment, which probably was never a real commitment, but more of a reading the political signs or seeing which way the political wind was blowing. And I've felt this way for a long time. I'm not, by the way, an enemy of electric cars. I am an enemy of mandating them. I am an enemy of the government mandating them. I dislike the idea that people will be muscled out of how they want to drive and what they want to drive. But it just looks like the politicians are starting to, I'm sorry, not the politicians, but the car companies are starting to prepare their or unveil their plan B, which we've always known was there. We've always known that, no matter what they said publicly and how much they nodded at the Pauls, these people have companies to run, and they've got to sell millions of cars every year. And you know, on the drafting tables, not literally but figuratively, there are internal combustion engines, there are gasoline-powered models, there are hybrid models. They've got it ready to go, and all they need to see is the political winds shifting, and I think they're seeing that now. What were you saying, Don?
Oh, I have that Ford ad.
Oh, do you? All right, let's take a listen to it. This is the one I'm describing from the Final Fours.
No matter how you want to power up or what you want to do with that power, let Ford be your starting line. Gas, hybrid, or all electric, the power is yours.
Hmm. Gas? I haven't heard that mentioned in a while. When's the last time you saw a car company mention gas? 99.9% of us are doing, but nonetheless. And when you look at the green energy economy overall, I mean, does anybody really know what we've spent total in taxpayer subsidies for solar and wind? I mean, it's got to be in, we've now got to be nearing the trillions, if not in the trillions of dollars. And what were we told? It's coming. It's inevitable. It's going to be the cheapest, most reliable form of electricity. And all those claims have been defied and defeated by reality. It may be the single most deceptive advertising message ever given to the public. Wind and solar only produce when the sun is shining or the wind is blowing. They seem uniquely unreliable during critical moments and bad weather. Large emerging industrial countries, China, India, Indonesia, have recently added much more coal than solar and wind. I mean, if you think about those countries, very fast growing, very emergent, huge and growing populations. They cannot mess around, flirt, play games with their future. You might say, in essence, they're kind of like reality-based. They're just doing what needs to be done. They don't care what the world thinks. They are not listening to John Kerry, or now it's John Podesta. If solar and wind were cheaper and cheap, you would think that emerging and developing countries would be all over them. But they're not, because they're not. And poor countries, I read that poor countries in Africa are dumping solar panels and solar farms, among other things, not a reliable source of energy, but also leaking toxic chemicals into the soil and water supplies. And they do not have, in these countries, the resources to do the kind of massive Superfund cleanups that we saw in the United States from Superfund sites in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. So that adds to the total true cost. What we really need, it turns out, if we're interested in protecting the planet, and we should be, we actually need to do more of what we had most recently been doing, which is cleaning up and continually refining the clean usage of the most reliable forms of energy generation, and getting real about technologies like what they call modular nuclear, which in developing countries can be scaled up or down as needed. So, but I thought the Ford ad was kind of maybe a little glimmer that we are getting back to reality-based plans here. Let's hope, right? Cross your fingers, say your prayers. Bobby Bartels is a union leader in New York City. He did an interview where he said that he has informally polled his members, and he believes that Trump is leading among his thousands of union members by about a 3-to-1 margin. Listen to what he says about where they've been and where they are now politically. Cut number one.
In the past, we are basically Democrats, all of us. And after what's happened the last 4 years in this country, Democrats are basically pushing everybody to the other side. We're a very patriotic group, and we love our country, and we want the best for America. We are tired of immigration. We're tired of our tax dollars going to immigration. We're tired of the crime. We need to put a handle on things in this country and bring it back to how it should be. I put out a poll in my union. President Trump is leading Joe Biden 3-to-1 on my presidential poll out of my 9,000 members right now. We are very tired of the situation with groceries, inflation, gas prices, illegal immigration, crime. We're living it every day in New York City.
He had met with Trump while Trump is in New York. I don't know if you've heard Trump is in New York. Have you heard that? Yeah, he's got something that he's doing there that he has to be in New York a lot right now. So, and we were talking about TikTok, and as you know, the Senate passed the ban TikTok bill. I wanted to play for you what is one of the hottest songs on TikTok right now. Take a listen to this, cut number two.
I don't want to contribute nothing to society. I don't struggle, I don't hustle. If you want it, you can have it. Sorry, I wasn't going to work. No, I wasn't going to work. I'm too pretty to get dirty. Yeah, I said that you can sue me. Don't want to lift a finger.
By the money, by the money.
I'm too pretty to get dirty. I got to remember that. I got to use that line. I got to work that into a conversation. There's a controversy in Detroit tonight that I don't know if you've heard this or not. This is a fantastic story. I would love to be a radio talk show host in Detroit just long enough to talk about this. You know, when you go to, or maybe you don't know, but when you go to Hollywood, you know the Hollywood sign, the huge letters up there in the hills. It's a landmark. It's been there a long time. There's a whole story about how it got there and whatnot. People take pictures. They have put up a similar sign in Detroit along I-94. Big, huge DETROIT letters. And it's ostensibly to welcome everyone to tonight's NFL draft, which is in Detroit. But it's a permanent sign. It's not like they had it done at, you know, the local, quick print shop or something. In fact, it turns out that they spent almost $500,000 on the sign. And people are hot about it. Because Detroit, as you probably can imagine, is not rolling in dough and has a few other problems. A few other, challenges. So first you've got the controversy over just the grift and the graft of putting up a sign like that. But then they found they had a new problem. In addition to that, people are stopping on the side of the freeway to take selfies in front of the Detroit sign. And there's a specific law against stopping to take pictures along the highway. We've had to stop and remind a lot of people that it's illegal. They're writing a lot of tickets, says Michigan State Police Lieutenant Michael Shaw. We'd rather not give people citations, so we've just been reminding them that it's dangerous and illegal to stop on the side of the freeway. Yeah, I would think so. I would think it might be. But imagine putting the whole sign up just in the middle of it. This, to me, is like, honestly, I'm almost ambivalent to even bring this up, because this sounds like something that if the San Antonio City Council hears about it, we are so getting this sign, right? I mean, they would love this idea. Love it. Now let's go to, this is a lawsuit involving a chain of convenience stores. I don't think we have them here. I don't know if we do. I've seen them in other places. I've not seen them around here. They're called Sheetz. In fact, I think it was a Sheetz store that President Biden went into the other day for his campaign photo op. But Sheetz is a chain of convenience stores, gas stations, sandwiches, you know, the whole thing. They are being sued for a civil rights violation because they're accused of discriminating against minority job seekers. Now, you would think in this day and age, I mean, how can a company openly discriminate against minority job seekers? Well, Sheetz has a policy that does not hire people with a criminal record. So they ask if you have a criminal record. You apply for a job at Sheetz, they want to know, they check. If you do, you can't work there. And that is disproportionately denying employment to minority job seekers because more of them have the criminal record than non-minority job seekers. So here are the numbers, just so you have an idea of what we're looking at here. According to the EEOC, minority applicants were denied employment at a rate of 14.5%. Multiracial job seekers were turned away 13.5% of the time. Native Americans were denied at a rate of 13%. White applicants were denied at a rate of less than 8%. Do you think a company should be able to draw that line and make that rule for itself? And is that discrimination? Or is that qualification? Like, I'm not in this business. I don't know. I would imagine that maybe they feel like they want employees that haven't been in criminal trouble before because they trust them more, or they feel more secure with them handling money. And, you know, in a lot of convenience store situations, you're the only person in the store. So an employee of your company is alone, unsupervised, has to be trusted. Could that be it? Or do you think this is just kind of mean and cruel and pointless? And sure, give these people a chance. If they want to work, even if they have a record, look, they're applying for a job. It shows that they want to turn their lives around and get some work. What are you doing? What do you think? I'm always going to, first of all, I'm always going to defer to a business's right to make its own policies and rules, just like when businesses say we don't allow mustaches or facial hair or we require a uniform. I always think that whether you and I think it makes sense or not, whether you or I think, well, I wouldn't do that if I was in charge, is not the point. They have it. They own it. They have skin in the game. They can make the rules. Is this a sensible rule? I don't know. But is it their right to make it? Sure, it is. Well, that's going to be litigated as we go down the line. By the way, there's also a bill in California, speaking of equity and discrimination and all this, there's a bill in California that would end expedited airport screening. You know how you can get into that program, and I forget what it's called, but I think it's called the checkpoint or checklist or whatever. TSA is a program where you can get yourself pre-checked and skip the line and, you know, get to your gate easier, sooner, less hassle, whatever. Well, they've decided in California that is unfair because a disproportionate number of white people have the expedited airport screening. It's resulting in unequal racial outcomes. So it's run by a private company that's licensed by the government. Apparently, this company has some sort of efficient way of screening and checking people. It would be just like the politicians to see a private sector, more efficient version of what they're doing and say, we've got to kill that. And that's apparently what they're doing in California. So I could have just stopped within California, right? I know, yeah. On the JR poll, River City Oral Surgery powered. Bucky's etiquette. Is it right or wrong to leave your vehicle at the pump while you go inside the store? You did not like this. 69% said it is wrong. 31% said it's okay. New JR poll tomorrow. We go live at 4. Find it anytime at KTSA.com. You can find this whole show, episodes of the Jack Riccardi Show on demand as podcasts by going to the on-demand menu at KTSA.com or look for the Jack Riccardi Show podcast wherever you like to get your other favorite podcasts. Happy 110th birthday to Vincent Dransfield of Little Falls, New Jersey. He is one of the oldest people in the world. Not the oldest. You would think at 110, but no, he's only the seventh oldest person in the world. A former volunteer fire chief, a great grandfather of seven. Vincent says he lives alone with no home health aid, lives in a three-story house, gets around just fine, still drives, no major issues. He was a smoker for 20 years. He worked from the age of 15 until his late 70s. He says he eats whatever he likes, including hamburgers, milk, chocolate, and Italian food. I'd already be dead. I'd have been dead 5 years ago if I did all the things this guy does. 110 years old. Says he has an occasional beer, drinks coffee every day, finds all the people working out and jogging amusing, he says. 110 years old. God bless him. Happy birthday to him. Well, it's Throwback Thursday. We counted down the top 10 from this week in 1971, and we leave you tonight with a little more of this week's number one song from that year. Have a good night.